Accessing library computer data.
And to make sure history never forgets the name Enterprise.
Welcome again to the Penske File podcast. We're talking about Star Trek The Next Generation. Your usual host, Wes, is he heard the last episode and he decided not to come back. So I am Clay McCormick. I'm your host for this episode. And with me today is Sean and Dan. How you guys doing?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm happy to be here for the impromptu episode of the RoboCop Appreciation Hour with Clay.
Oh my God! Why am I on this then?
Because you're going to talk in the second hour when it turns into the Highlander Appreciation Podcast.
2 hours? No. What about Star Trek?
This is going to be.
I watched this episode for nothing.
It's going to be the McLaughlin Group, rest in peace, of RoboCop.
Anyway, today we're talking about Rightful Heir, which is episode 23 of season 6.
And I'm assuming the McLaughlin Group is a RoboCop reference.
You know, you're big into politics, Sean. You've never watched the McLaughlin Group?
Are they like the Cyberdyne of RoboCop?
No, I think you're thinking of Omni Consumer Products.
Oh, sorry. Okay. All right. Go ahead, Clay.
Anyway, this is Rightful Heir, episode 23 of season 6 of Star Trek: The Next Generation. This episode is about Worf goes on a peyote trip and sees Jesus, or Klingon Jesus.
Yep.
And I wanted to have Sean on for this episode specifically because it reminded me a lot of his graphic novel out now from Vertigo Comics called Punk Rock Jesus.
Yeah, when you sent me that tweet, I thought, I don't know what the hell he's talking about. But then when I started watching it, I'm like, oh, that's right, he's a clone. And as I watched more and more, I was reminded how much I might have ripped this off without realizing it.
Well, it's directed by Weinrich Kolbe, teleplay by Ronald D. Moore, story by James E. Brooks. And Worf experiences a crisis of faith and travels to a Klingon holy site where the mythic figure Kaelas returns to lead the Klingon people. So, since I believe all three of us have watched this episode, Sean, why don't we start with you, and why don't you give us your thoughts on this so far?
Man, I really love this. I don't think there's anything I would cut or change. I thought the actor who played Kaelas was great. I liked the political maneuvering, and it reminds me a lot of the book I wrote, and when Jesus came back as a clone, and even the argument at the end of my book was very much the same, was, well, who's to say that a clone doesn't count as a second coming?
Right, right.
And then there's the argument of like, well, you know, people are sheep and then they need bullshit to do their daily in and out, so let's give them their sheep and we'll just kind of live with that, you know?
Right, right.
So I, for a show that doesn't tackle religion, this episode certainly does. And I'm curious, like, people who are heavily religious, if they see the obvious connotations that it's implying.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting to me, too, because it's what happens at the end is really fascinating to me. The message that they put across is interesting, but before that, the idea that Worf's solution to the problem is to put this religious figure in, make him the emperor of all the Klingon people, which... Yeah. Is kind of an extreme way to go. Dan, what did you think?
I thought that was surprising, but I have never seen this episode before. I didn't remember it, and I really liked this one. I probably liked this one more than any episode I've watched in a while, partially because of the novelty of it, but as I've complained about in the past, I don't think that the show always takes advantage of the single-serving nature of the way that the show is set up. You know, there's no mm-hmm. real arcs, and they don't ever do any deep dives. And this felt like a good deep dive, and it actually had a point of view, and it was actually quite a lean script with almost, was there any B story at all? Probably not. Like this
not really,
one,
no.
I was just kind of like, oh man, this is, wow. Like I was, as we'll talk about, I was like stunningly satisfied by this one.
Right. Yeah, and you know, I think it goes to show you know, one of the biggest problems I've had, and I think has been a general gripe among a lot of us with looking back on this show, is how much the B story can tend to be completely pointless and just an excuse to use all the characters and, you know, really ham-fistedly, you know, pushed in there. But in this case, they don't even have one, and it's better for it because it really allows them to kind of sharpen their point of view and spend time with these interesting concepts instead of just, you know, trying to split it between a story where, oh, well, Jesus is back, but also there's a coolant leak and Geordi doesn't know what to do because he's in love with a girl.
One thing I think they could have cut was the beginning on the Enterprise. Now that I think about it, I don't think that's needed. You could have opened with Worf at a shrine praying, getting frustrated that he's not seeing, you know, you didn't need him to be dressed down by Picard. Really?
Yeah, I was wondering, I think Wes probably knows the answer to this, and maybe either you guys do, because I think both of you are probably more well-versed in the show as a whole than I am, but is the stuff that Picard is referencing to Worf, is that events we've previously seen, or is that something that has happened off-screen?
Yeah, this is proof that you don't actually listen to all these podcasts.
Hey, man, I'm real busy, all right?
He's waiting for his own episodes to come out. I get it.
Well, Sean, enlighten me.
Well, there was an episode, it was a two-parter, actually.
Are you sure? Did you watch it?
Yes, it was the one where Worf dresses in black SWAT gear, goes to a forgotten Klingon Romulan settlement, and finds all these Klingon kids who have forgotten their past, and he teaches them basically how to fight and become little mini terrorists, and it was a good episode.
So they're all terrible fighters then, right?
Well, they become great. He basically disrupts this balanced culture of a peaceful truce between the Romulans and the Klingons. So it's debatable if he actually did anything good at all, but he did awaken these Klingon kids. So at the beginning of this, what you are missing is that he's referring to this episode that you should have watched.
I get a lot of TV to watch, man, all right?
We live in an age of content overload, you know.
The Olympics are on. I get reruns of Saturday Night Live on Comedy Central I got to watch.
The Olympics. You like watching polluted athletes over Star Trek?
Oh, God. Steroids are the best. I love them.
I just meant the water they're swimming in, but yeah. Dan, what did you think of this episode? Oh, you already kind of told us, I guess.
I did.
Hey, I'm steering this ship, Sean, okay?
hurry up, would you?
This is pure, without the soothing tones of Wes here, this is just descending into chaos, and one of us is going to be drinking blood out of the skull of another one by the end of this episode.
Pretty much.
Who do you think does the best Wes impression?
Whew.
Moving on.
Wes here, I always kind of do this with my voice. And Clay, what do you think? Buddy, I don't know.
We're never going to be invited back on this show.
This is Mom is away, and we're just fucking burning the house down.
One thing I loved, made me laugh out loud, is when Kayla shows up and they compare him to their Kayla's fan. Yeah. That sweet Drew Struzan Kayla's that they have on the wall.
Yeah, the guy who had died 15,000 years ago or whatever shows up wearing the same thing he's wearing in the painting that's on the wall.
He should have walked out of the painting sort of Vigo style, just sort of.
Oh yeah.
If they had like that extra $10,000 or whatever for that sweet ass special effect, they should have just strutted his cheetah fur straight out of that painting.
Yeah. Oh, that jacket was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
I gotta admit.
So, now, what do you guys think about... Do you think Worf has changed at all by the end of this episode? Do you think looking at what he went through and the decisions that he had to make, do you think he has changed at all, or do you think he's in the same spot that he was when it started?
Daniel?
I have to hope it seems like he's changed. If nothing else, he offers a very pragmatic solution to things. You know, what's the episode where he and Picard go to negotiate a new Klingon high council and they just end up killing each other, and even Picard is stabbing people? It's clearly the opposite of that, which was actually part of the reason that it was so satisfying. Like, as if I wasn't already surprised enough by the clone thing, which got me, the twist got me, it was satisfying to see him come to a somewhat extreme, but pretty smart end, and satisfying that it was sort of out of the somewhat one-dimensional character that they've established for him, and that he didn't try and, like, barrel roll into someone and punch someone and knife someone to solve the problem. So it did feel like there was change, and that, again, it was part of why this was so satisfying.
Sean?
Worf seemed a little naive for the first part of this. I think if this was season one Worf, when he was just sort of following orders blindly and all about honor, I could see that, but this is season six now, and he's learned enough about politics and seen how Picard... He should know that you just can't thrust this guy, you can't make Jesus the president, and then expect the Obama or whoever to just step down and high-five him on the way out. I mean, he should know that this is complicated. And by the end of it, he does. He does come around. So, I mean, I'll chalk it up to, like, you know, he was very taken by this spiritual, you know, whatever, so he maybe was wrong to follow him so blindly. But I think Gowron was the most wise out of all of these people, to be honest.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, you know, going into that ending, I think that's the one thing that I don't really like about it, is the solution they come up with is very strange to me, where it's not like, it's not let this Kalus clone be his own person and find out who he is or something more, you know, humanitarian like that. It's, well, everyone thinks he's God, so let's just tell everyone that he is God and make him the emperor. Even if that doesn't have any weight to it, you're still making him the emperor of your people. And I, that's, Gowron. For Gowron just to be like, you know what, that's the best decision to make, is very strange to me.
That's not what they decided, though. They wanted Gowron to still be the president.
Right, no, I understand that there's still basically the parliament system, but right. He's basically now, you know, Prince Charles.
Right, he's a figurehead. But I think that's good. I think the flaw in, for once, I think the flaw is actually important here, because mm-hmm. it doesn't come to a tidy solution like a lot of the episodes do, where it's
okay.
like they need to stop the Enterprise from blowing up. This is more, there's something enjoyable about it, leaving it this sort of tattered end, this sort of thread mm-hmm. that sort of, it's probably not the best idea, but you're like, oh, okay, it's cool. It's just a cool idea. And the fact that it doesn't come to the sort of somewhat cold, perfect ending that a lot of the episodes do is satisfying. And it goes to why it's an interesting episode to watch.
Well, I guess what surprised me about it is that the Klingons before this have never really felt like a religious people.
Right.
You know, they're a lot more dirt and blood kind of people.
Mm-hmm.
So to have this character who is now, for all intents and purposes, going to be the spiritual leader of this entire people, I don't know. I guess it doesn't not make sense, but it seems like kind of a big step for what we've seen so far of the Klingons.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I felt that it was very plausible. I mean, Gowron has two choices. He can kill this guy or get rid of him, or he can embrace him and try to incorporate him into his plan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a perfect solution. And of course, he would rather this never have happened at all. But now that this guy's here, the secret's out, what are you going to do, you know?
Right, right.
I think that at the end, when he bowed to him, I don't see Gowron bowing to him. I actually think that they should have, you're going to laugh, bowed at the painting. Just at the idea,
okay,
like
they're
all down with the idea. Like, all right, you're a carbon copy, and maybe you will be great one day. But right now, we're all in this for a higher reason that's beyond any of us. That's
right.
Not you. It's that guy in that painting.
Yeah, that makes sense. That would have been a really interesting scene. Actually, that would have been pretty cool.
Well, they kind of have that
painting again.
They kind of have that in, even once the truth is revealed. Those two, and this is one of my favorite scenes, is that Worf and Data go back down to the holodeck, and two of the Klingons are still there, sort of praying and waiting,
right.
and their faith is still intact even after all of that. So it's a nice little nod, it's a nice little detail to sort of prove out what their faith is like, and they're already, it's like, hey, it's already the strong-headed people, here's a nice application of that towards their faith. So that little scene right there was pretty cool.
Right,
right, right.
Do you think Worf needed to threaten with his brother, you know, my brother and our people will remove support? Or he made another threat to Gowron to get him on board. It wasn't just that he had a great idea, he also had to threaten him. Do you
That's
think
true.
He needed that threat?
Yeah, I mean, probably. I don't know, because Gowron didn't seem like he was going to fall in line with this very quickly. I mean, because, you know, I guess I'm thinking about it from his perspective, where even a figurehead could theoretically hold more power than he does if he gets enough people behind him, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, I think he definitely needed the nudge to fall in line, I guess.
Right.
Right.
I think that if they were able to clone Gowron and then upload his memories and change his mental pathways or whatever, they could have also given him, matrixed him out a bit with some kung fu and made him a better warrior.
Yeah. Well, see, that's an interesting thing, because I was thinking about it. Once they kind of revealed what the deal was, why does the fact that he's a clone of this person make him wise enough to continue the legacy? You know what I mean? Like, I know that they uploaded, you know, whatever teachings into his brain or whatever,
right.
But does that not also leave room for him to be controlled? I mean,
right.
We're probably thinking five steps beyond the end of this episode here, but it's just an interesting thing to think about.
No, you're right. So he's uploaded with all the Bibles and verses, and like a lot of blind Christians, they seem very convinced of their own BS, and they're able to seemingly hold the attention of an entire room or a church.
Mm-hmm.
Do they actually have any real-life experience? I don't know, but they're good at faking it. And
right.
There is a skill to that, and this guy does have that skill. And even though he doesn't actually have these actual experiences as Kalis, he is the foundation of Kalis. Like, maybe in 20 years he will be just as wise as Kalis, because he's still got the same brain,
mm-hmm.
in a way,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Right.
The potential with this guy should be through the roof, even though he's a little underprepared right now.
Or
right.
He's the Kalis for a new generation, and they can imprint, you know, what they need for now on him, and not from
right.
15,000
right.
years ago.
Like, he's regular Kalis, but he's got sunglasses on now.
Yeah, exactly. New hat.
Well, it would
two action figures.
this would be an interesting character to go back and revisit, because it would be interesting to see where he is however many years later. You know, like, that sort of thing would be pretty interesting. I mean, you'd basically have, like, kind of, I wonder if it would be like the second half of Punk Rock Jesus, where he decides he doesn't want to do this anymore, kind of thing,
right.
You know? It would be
yeah.
interesting to see what direction he goes in.
So there's a Deep Space Nine episode where Worf eventually kills Gowron.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that would be a great time for Kalis to pop in and be like, hey-o, about time, you know, he sits in the throne or whatever. But
right.
I don't remember him being part of it, but that would have been a really cool thing to see, like a hell of a throwback.
Yeah, oh,
mm-hmm.
absolutely. Now, what do you guys think about Star Trek covering this sort of thing, this sort of concept in the show? Because it's really the first time, as you, I think you said earlier, Sean, it's really the first time that they've, you know, dug deep into the idea of religion more than they have. I mean, they tie it in with the clone thing, but it's really an episode about faith and about religion. And that's very unique on this show, which is, it's not really something they ever talk about.
Right. Yeah, what do you think, Dan?
I think that it was very refreshing. That's probably the simplest way to say it. It's nice that for them to go for something that's a little more atmospheric and a little more romantic, that lets what can often be a very dialogue-heavy and less so action-heavy kind of show actually play to that advantage. And it mm-hmm. freshens things up, and there's always a nice interplay between sci-fi and religion. Anytime it's done really well, it works, you know, perfectly. And I think this is one of those places where it kind of late with this middle of the season, of a late season, mm-hmm. it's just sort of breaks it out of the mold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why did Roddenberry not want to do religion?
That's
I don't
a good
know
question.
The answer.
Yeah,
well,
I mean,
he's an atheist. Okay, so you don't
right.
want to tackle it because you think it's all BS. Well, why not use this amazing conveyor you've created to address it? You know,
right.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why avoid it completely? You know,
it's
so
it still exists. You know, I mean, they The problem I have with his whole ethos is that I feel like the world he created was so antiseptic by nature that, like, I feel like there was a disconnect between, oh, well, that doesn't exist anymore because everything is perfect, and, oh, wait, this stuff does still exist, and this would be a great avenue for us to discuss it. Right. Like, you know, right. They don't really talk about racism on the original show. They don't have, they talk about it by not talking about it, basically. It's like, oh, well, we have a multi-ethnic crew, and that's all we have to say about that. But they could go into it a lot more, you know, just because Starfleet is theoretically no longer racist doesn't mean that there aren't other species who are racist, you know?
Right.
And it's really strange how antiseptic the actual concept is and how it doesn't really get exploited to its fullest potential until, unfortunately, after he was no longer in the picture.
Right. And I guess that's kind of what I was getting at, is that often things are very rigid and somewhat antiseptic. And frankly, I've always thought that either Starfleet or humans specifically are just way too accepting of the new races and creatures that they come across. I feel like the Daniel version of Star Trek involves a lot of like initial disgust and distrust.
Oh, yeah.
And this kind of goes more into that area of just a more like realistic approach to it. Even if you're anti-religion, and you can probably take a pretty strong anti-religion stance away from this one if you choose to parse it out that way. And that's good. I think that's good in that it's actually leading us down to some actual discussion instead of Geordi getting the hots for some mining expert on satellite or something.
Yeah, the irony and the hypocrisy, I guess you could say, about Roddenberry's thing was, let's really embrace of all the amazing stuff about humanity, but while you're on the ship, you're not allowed to have feelings.
Right.
Right.
It's like, dude, like, whoa, that does not make sense at all. You know, I don't want to repeat myself.
It's that ironic sort of militant atheism that can sometimes find itself on the same playing field. I don't want to like trip over my own dick trying to be deep, but it's like, you know what I'm saying? It's like it can hit that same level.
Yeah.
Right. Well, my favorite part of this episode is when it turns into a Manowar video for like 15 minutes
halfway
through. And it's just like sword fights and drinking and you know, awesome jackets.
Legs of meat on a wooden table with grapes in metal
bowls. Dan, you had mentioned it before, but I wish you hadn't said anything because I was paying a lot of attention to the Klingon head ridges in this episode, because there are a lot of them and they are funky.
Yeah.
Galron's
looks like a clit over his head.
See, Sean, now you're pointing to something that when I was texting him weird things before he watched the episode, I said, not only does it seem like every Klingon's head is cold all the time, but you know that Klingon sex involves those ridges, because the ridges are like so deep and weird and organic. You know there's some tickling that happens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's
and
like
man,
a Klingon French tinkler.
Kalis looked like he had, you know, like a nice big piece of chewed up bubble gum on his forehead. So I don't know. I don't know, want to know what goes on with that guy.
Yeah. Do you ever watch
on sex toys?
Yeah. There's a black market trade of head massagers from Earth to the Klingon Empire as sex toys.
Yes. Anyway, unless you guys have anything else you want to say, I think we'll take a quick break and come back and give final thoughts.
Seriously, the heads all look like vagina stamps.
Pretty much. Like one of those Rorschach tests where it's just always a vagina every time.
Basically, yeah.
All right, you guys think of what each head ridge looks like. We'll be back in a second.
Accessing library computer data.
Hey, it's me, Wes, back again with another abbreviated thoughts for one of these episodes that I haven't been able to do the main podcast on, but I'm sure that I think Sean, Dan, and Clay did this one. I'm sure they did a great job. This one is probably the more interesting episode than Suspicions, which was the last one that they did. My brief thoughts here. Rightful Heir, doesn't it kind of fit so sweetly into the Worf storylines. And I mean that in the sense that it's the Worf storylines are funny because it's if I was to like modernize the show, I think I'd go along with something like what they did with the Worf storyline. Like, I think the Worf continuing storyline is probably one of the tightest overarching stories that they ever did. You know, I think if you were to watch, if you were to pull out all of the Worf Klingon storylines and you watch them in order, I think they would hold up pretty well. And I don't know if you could say that about some of the other character stories. I feel like they'd be a little bit more jumbled up. But I feel like the Worf storyline has been a very straight arrow through the heart of this narrative for him. And it sort of makes sense to come, you know, right out of Birthright, which I don't know if those guys watch, which might be why they, if they didn't get the reference at the start about what Worf was talking about, it's about Birthright. And it feeds nicely into this about Worf's sort of clash of cultures and questioning his faith in the Klingon culture. And I think that this episode is good. It's like very good, but it's not great. And I feel like that's the thing with all the Worf storylines. And I wonder, I hope, I don't know if those guys talked about it, but I would like to talk about it at some point. Hopefully there's another Worf storyline. About the fact that why the Worf stuff doesn't really feel like it hits all the time. I don't know why it is. I don't know if it's because the Klingons are involved and they're not particularly well drawn or particularly that, all that interesting. Dorne is fine in it. I like Worf, the character. For some reason, all of the Worf storylines feel like they're 4 out of 5. So for me, that's what this episode is going to be. But they feel like they're all very good, but none of them are really great. And none of them are ever any of the best episodes that the show ever did. And I don't know why that is. And that's kind of interesting. But anyway, outside of that, for the episode itself, I really like this episode. I think it's a very interesting take on religion from TNG's sort of ethos and point of view. You know, I think that the narrative does a really good job of disguising what's going on for a long time, and sort of they play up the is it or is it not Kahless very well. You know, each act break ends with some sort of revelation about whether or not it is Kahless, and it always turns out to be. The genetic testing works through. I think modern audiences would probably have a quicker time picking up the fact that it's a clone than maybe audiences in the early 90s did. But I think it still holds up. The one weak part, I think, is that Kahless, after it's revealed that he's a clone, just sort of disappears into the background. But I love Gowron. I think Gowron is excellent in this one. I think that it's a great sort of it's a great understanding of the way that they've drawn the Klingon so far. And it continues this thing that I never really appreciated about TNG. TNG seems to think that the, or seems to be telling us, as opposed to think that the Klingon Empire is always been on the verge of collapse for the entire run of the series. Like that, ever since TOS ended, the Klingons have had really nothing to do. Their great warrior culture is sort of falling apart into sort of corruption and things like that. And TNG, I never really realized how strong they were stressing that story, and it works here. This feels very fitting to be sort of one of the final Klingon stories in that vein, about how the Klingons are going to sort of recover their way of being and recover their soul and everything, and it's through this Kahless thing. I don't know. Hopefully the other guys would talk about it, but I don't know how much of it's, the show is ostensibly about sort of examining your faith and everything. And it sort of ends in a very interesting place to me. And I don't think I'll be able to cover that all here, but it's a really interesting way that they approach religion in this and Worf's reaction to the religion. And I think that Data's sort of speech about he's more than gears and gizmos or whatever he says something better than that, is a really great scene for those two. And I love the Worf and Data pairing. I think it always works really well. But that's it. Those are my abbreviated thoughts. I like this one. It's not one that I'm going to watch all the time. It's not one that I would probably put on, but I do think it's a pretty strong episode. So a 4 out of 5 for me. So Clay, Sean, and Dan, thank you very much for giving me your time to the podcast and pumping out an episode for Rightful Hair. And guys, I will be back probably the episode after this. I definitely am back in the episode after this. So thank you for listening, and I will see you next time.
Okay, so final thoughts on Rightful Heir. Sean, why don't you go first, give it a rating 1 to 5, and remember, your rating will depend on how severely you get sued by the writers of this episode.
I'm going to go 5. Yeah, I think it went deep. I think it took chances. All the acting was great. Casting was great. I like the matte painting. I mean, I like the fan art of him too. Yeah, I really don't have much to not a lot of fat on this one, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'd go five. How about
Dan?
You guys?
I'm giving this a very strong five. It satisfied my biggest complaint of not ever diving deep on anyone. I think it did a really good job, and it got rid of the sort of antiseptic quality that hangs around a lot of the sort of middling episodes. And it's just, it's lean and really well written. There's no B story, and that gives it a huge boost for me. You could say it's the RoboCop of Star Trek The Next Generation episodes.
Sean just changed his rating to a 1. I have to agree with both of you guys. This is the RoboCop. No,
I didn't say that.
I have to agree with both of you guys. This is a strong 5, and it's, you know, it's not a natural 5 or not an obvious 5, because I feel like a lot of the 5s are
they're very flashy.
Yeah, very flashy and very Star Trek. This one is not necessarily a very Star Trek-y kind of episode.
Yeah.
It's just a really good exploitation of the characters and their world, and you know, it's not something they do all the time, and I think it's fairly difficult to pull something like this episode off and have it be as good as it was.
Yeah, I think it's a sleeper 5. I mean, I completely forgot about it, but you're right, most of the 5s are big and flashy and intended to be 5s in a way.
Right, yeah.
It's also the most metal of the of Star Trek episodes.
Oh my god, yeah.
You've got manly feelings, you've got legs of some animal, you've got torches.
What is it, Klingon Warnog?
Yeah, you got that Warnog.
You have a sweet painting that looks like it belongs on the side of a van.
Show me a religion where you prove yourself by fighting God with a knife, and you'll finally have me on. You'll finally have me on your team.
Oh man, the balls that Worf has before he realizes that, when he still thinks this guy is probably Kalis, when he's just like, you know what, we should probably have a sword fight.
Yeah. Wait, Worf didn't. Oh yeah, they.
Yeah, Worf fights him at the beginning.
That's right. He stopped. He started laughing.
Which goes to show you how bad of a fighter Worf actually is, because Kalis gets pretty punked out by Gowron later on in the episode.
Well, I noticed that he was sort of stopped halfway. Kalis just starts laughing and he just distracts.
Right.
Because maybe
right.
he knew he was about to get his ass kicked.
Well, see, that's interesting to me. I mean, you know, we could probably talk longer about this, but that, like, now does he? At that point, does he realize that he is not as good a fighter as he thinks he is? Or does he not realize that until later? Because he has that scene where they tell him he's a clone, and he's kind of, it's all kind of like hitting him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, does he recognize earlier that he's, something's wrong, but they, you know, I don't know.
Because there's something satisfying about the level of, like, pride or hubris that the Kalis clone is carrying himself with. So that's sort of, it's nice to see him as this imperfect character.
Right.
Well, to his credit, though, he does take it all pretty well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
and
I know.
He goes from, like, it's me, I'm the only thing. Oh, I'm a clone? What's that? Oh, I guess that works, too.
Yeah. At least he doesn't go crazy and, like, light himself on fire or something.
No.
But maybe when he was fighting Worf, he was thinking, either I'm still the greatest fighter in the world, or this guy is just terrible.
But this guy's Kalis. Oh. Yeah.
I guess my one last question, and this is more of a technical question, is when Worf had candles in his room on the Enterprise, is it?
When he was praying to Jobu?
Yeah, when he was getting very heady. Is the Enterprise like a pure oxygen environment? Would he have blown up? I'm not usually Mr. Magic Xylophone, you know, Clay, that I usually give most of this stuff a ton of leeway. But for some reason today, I was a fire marshal.
Why was there not, like, just smoke pouring out of the door of his quarters?
The alternate version where he's, save me, Kalis, and then it just cuts to the outside of the Enterprise and just a huge hole bursts in the side of it. But
I'm
anyway.
I'm sure phasers would light up all oxygen environment as well.
That's true.
That's
the sparks that fly every time anything happens.
That's
well,
it's
even
always
even if it's not even if it's not like an oxygen content thing, it's just like imagine you're on like a 747 and the people on the top floor of the 747 are just cooking steaks. You know, that's gonna, I don't know how, unless he's got a really good bathroom fan, it's gonna get pretty smoky in that room pretty quick.
Well, even it's
Go ahead, sorry.
Even if it's not a pure oxygen environment, the amount of carpet on the Enterprise and the amount of sparks together seems like just terrible engineering flaw.
That's true. I want a story about the carpet cleaner guy. I was also thinking, you remember that scene in Demolition Man where Stallone gets into a car accident and the car fills with foam?
Yes. Yes.
Imagine that kind of fire retardant system on the Enterprise. Or any time it crashes. Like, how often have we seen the disc crash? Like, there must be an airbag, some kind of, like, last chance scenario. You know, gravity thing's not working, whatever, can't beam out. What about pillows everywhere? I mean, there has to be something like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you go just based on the damage it's taken on the show and in the movies, it is not very friendly to passengers.
Yeah.
I mean, that shit's going to splinter and shatter and explode.
Yeah. I mean, imagine, all right, what happens if we crash? Oh, you won't, because we'll have dampeners. Or what if the dampeners are broken? Well, you know,
By that point, you're probably dead anyway.
Right, you've been so burnt up by command panel sparks that you don't even notice.
Oh, man, command panel sparks. That's a band right there.
I'm adding it to the list.
Alrighty, well, I think that's it for us in this episode. If you'd like to leave a comment or a review on iTunes, that would be great.
And if you left one that said how much better it was without Wes, that would be awesome. You don't have to mean it.
Yeah, well, I don't know. This might be the last shows we ever do, Sean, judging by the last one. But if not, hopefully we'll all be back. Thank you, Sean, and thank you, Dan, for joining me on my very brief hosting stint here on the Penske 5 podcast. We'll see you later.
See ya.
See ya.